Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. French Prime Minister Edouard Philippe is in declaring a victory for President Emmanuel Macron's new centrist party in the first round of parliamentary elections in France on Sunday.
Mes chers concitoyens, la France est de retour.
Philippe said France is back and we pledge to move ahead quickly, he said, in bold reforms for protection of French workers as well as security policy. Macron's Republic on the Move party is projected to win a strong majority in the second round voting on June the 18th. British Prime Minister Theresa May, just off an electoral setback last week, announced changes to her cabinet days before her government embarks on Brexit negotiations with the European Union. Prime Minister said she's trying to bring certainty and stability to the country following last week's election in which her Conservative Party lost its majority status and now must seek a coalition with the Democratic Unionist Party of Northern Ireland.
That's what I've been doing today, putting together a cabinet that reflects the wealth of talent and experience across the Conservative Party, a cabinet that will get on with the job of government. That's about delivering a successful Brexit negotiations, and those negotiations start in a week's time.
May confirm most of the ministers from her previous cabinet, two close aides, resigned Saturday. Somali and U.S. military forces destroyed what the Pentagon called an Al-Shabaab training and logistics node in Somalia's middle Juba region. It said eight militants were killed. The strike targeted took place about 300 kilometers southwest of the capital, Mogadishu. President Mohamed Abdali said the strike will disrupt the enemy's ability to conduct new attacks. This is VOA News. Bahrain, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, who cut diplomatic ties with Qatar last week, indicated some Qatari citizens must be allowed to stay. Doha and the citizens of those countries have complete freedom to stay. Kuwait is trying to mediate the crisis, but Ali Shahabi of the Washington-based Arabia Foundation said that may not be enough.
So I think the question goes beyond just a simple mediation with Kuwait. I think the issue now is that there is such total mistrust of the Qatari leadership that they are going to have to prove to their neighbors that this sort of behavior will end for good.
Qatar denies any terrorist and welcomes talks on the issue. Embattled Philippine troops struggling to force out Islamist militants from the southern city of Marawi raised the national flag for Independence Day today. Thousands of Philippine soldiers advised by U.S. Special Forces are locked in a fierce battle with hundreds of insurgents who overran Marawi on May the 23rd, flying black flags of the Islamic State and using up to 2,000 civilians as human shields. Lieutenant Colonel Joar Herrera is a spokesman for the Philippine Army's 1st Infantry Division.
In terms of familial ties and connections, it's heavy. In terms of relatives, in terms of connections, in terms of culture, heritage, majority of them belong here in Marawi City. So you will expect that there are a lot of sympathizers.
Herrera says insurgents had prepared for as much as a year for assault on the southern Philippine state of Mindanao. Most of Marawi's 200,000 inhabitants have fled. More than 200 people have died. Residents of the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico voted Sunday to become the 51st U.S. state. Voter turnout was low. This is the fifth time the non-binding referendum has been put before the island's voters. In 2012, the island opted for statehood, but Congress, the ultimate arbiter of Puerto Rico's bid for statehood, never picked up the matter. A strong earthquake today has rocked western parts of Indonesia's main island, causing panic, but no immediate reports of casualties or damage. The quake shook large parts of western Java, including the capital, Jakarta. And Rafael Nadal has won the 10th French Open, titled demolishing Stan Wawrinka.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Monday, June 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Somali and U.S. military forces claim to have destroyed an Al-Shabaab training base.
It looks like a well-coordinated kind of an attack, and this was a well-chosen target. Of course, it's very difficult for us to assess the damages, but I think clearly this kind of coordination is probably what is needed.
Rashid Abdi is the regional project director for the International Crisis Group. Sudan says internal divisions within one of the rebel movements fighting the government may hinder peace talks next month. And one of the candidates in Liberia's 2017 presidential election accepts his party's nomination and comments on bringing about justice in Liberia.
The Truth and Reconciliation Commission report provides a lot of things, some of which have not been implemented, some of which have been implemented. And we will take a look at this report. And those things that will help us move our country forward will certainly be implemented.
Charles Bramski is the presidential candidate for the Liberty Party of Liberia, and we'll talk about the causes of forced marriages in Burundi. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Somali and U.S. military forces say they have destroyed an Al-Shabaab training base in Somalia's middle Jobe region. Somalia's President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo says Sunday he authorized the country's special forces with support from international partners to conduct a free dawn strike against an Al-Shabaab training camp near Sakwa. He said the strike destroyed a key Al-Shabaab command and supply hub. The U.S. military confirmed it participated in the strike as a direct response to recent attacks by Al-Shabaab on Somali and African Union forces. It says 8 Al-Shabaab militants were killed in the strike. Rashid Abdid, regional project director for the International Crisis Group, says the operation signals a level of coordination between the two countries.
Well, I think the first thing to say probably is that a lot of effort was definitely made to, I think, coordinate this attack. And I think the president himself came out with a statement suggesting that he gave the clearance. So I think it looks like a well-coordinated kind of an attack. And this was a well-chosen target. Of course, it's very difficult for us to assess the damages, but I think clearly this kind of coordination is probably what is needed, because the danger, of course, is that if the United States conducts its own unilateral, airstrikes, the danger, of course, is that that could risk civilian casualties.
And do you think the Somali government is really involved in this kind of operations?
I think there is bound to be some coordination, and I think clearly the Somali government definitely will be providing some sort of field intelligence to, the Americans. And so, it's not a unilateral American operation, definitely. And I think there was also an indication from the Pentagon statement that AMISOM itself was also involved. So overall, I think this may be, a much more cautious approach to airstrikes than probably we assumed would be the case in, when Trump administration announced that it was going to escalate the airstrike in Somalia.
So as you mentioned, Trump said he's going to escalate this, but Obama has been doing this for a number of years. Key Al-Shabaab individuals were targeted. Are we going to see any different in terms of the capability of Al-Shabaab in the coming months?
First of all, the agency which is conducting this airstrike is probably the Pentagon, and I don't think, despite the changes in administration, from an operational perspective, things are going to be that much different. However, I think clearly under Obama there was a lot of concern and emphasis that these airstrikes have to be conducted without causing civilian casualties. And, our expectation is that that same level of care and, caution should continue under this new administration. But also that the key to defeating Al-Shabaab, of course, is not airstrikes, but actually building the capability of the Somali National Army. And there was a signal, I think, from the administration that they are going to step up the training of specialized Somali military units. I don't want to overemphasize airstrikes because these airstrikes have been going on for a number of years, and Al-Shabaab itself is quite capable, I think, of continuing to survive despite the loss of so many of its leaders.
Rashid Abdid is the regional project director for the International Crisis Group. He was speaking from Nairobi, Kenya, with Haroon Maruf of the U.S. Somali Service. A member of the Sudan Liberation Movement faction led by Mini Minawi says it is not possible for peace talks between the Sudan government and the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North to resume sometime next month due to SPLM North internal crisis. The African Union-sponsored talks were postponed in April and were scheduled to resume next month. Last week, the SPLM North shuffled its leadership due to internal conflict. Abdulaziz Sam, a member of the Sudan Liberation Movement faction led by Mini Minawi, says talks are not possible because the Blue Nile and the Numba Mountain SPLM North must first iron out their differences. Secondly, he says, it's not clear whether the Khartoum government would accept the new leadership.
You know, the SPLM North is basically composed of Nuba Mountains, which is in South Kordofan, and the Blue Nile. So there is a problem that they have two legislative bodies. The legislative body of the Nuba Mountains had passed decrees where they removed the former chairman, Malik Agar, from the presidency of the SPLM, and they appointed his vice, Comrade Abdulaziz Al-Hilu, as a chairman of the SPLM North and commander-in-chief to the armies. This situation creates a new position that, because before the talk venue at Addis Ababa, which is headed by the high panel, by His Excellency Ambiki, that the SPLM was in almost 15 rounds being represented by chief negotiator Mr. Yasser Arman, who was the secretary general of the SPLM. Now the situation is completely different. The new decisions at the area of the Nuba Mountains, it creates a situation that needs some cooling down, some time for them to arrange themselves and to go to negotiate in the name of the Nuba Mountains area.
Let me ask you, the way we understand it is last year it was the SPLM North that asked the African Union mediator Thabo Mbeki to postpone the peace talks to next month, that's July. Now, do you think with what is going on now within the SPLM North, is there enough time for them to get their act together before July?
I don't think. Now here in this area, we are fasting Ramadan, you know, and this month also the activities are not too high. And now this problem which has happened within the SPLM is a very serious. You know, one of the parliament of the two areas has taken a decision with making a big change, you know. Now they overthrew the era of Malik Agar, and they now appointed his vice, Aziz Al-Hilu, as the chairman of the whole SPLM North. Is this decision is going to be endorsed and ratified by the other parliament of the Blue Nile? This is also a question and takes time. If this one is recognized, if the government of the Sudan is going to agree and to recognize this new change and sit with the SPLM of Aziz Al-Hilu, or they are going to say this is not the SPLM with which we sit for 15 rounds of talks, is the mediator, Mr. Ambiki Spanish. Are they going to play any role? The international community, the Troika, the Americans, the European countries, are they going to try to mediate, to settle this problem, to restore it? So any talks in July are not sure. I don't think that it works. But in July, because now most of Sudanese are Muslim and fasting this month, after the Eid of this Ramadan, then people can start running forth and behind to look for some settlements and consensus and solution to the problems that made by the and escalated by the new situation. So I'm not expecting real talks of rounds within this year, not only July, but also all the year if we are able to achieve any sort of settlement or to reunite the SPLM North and the leadership, that is good. The question is now how to reunite the SPLM North in one. This is the issue.
Abdulaziz Sam is a member of the Sudan Liberation Movement faction led by Mini Minawi. He was speaking with me from Uganda's capital, Kampala. Today is Monday, June 12th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. One of the candidates in Liberia's 2017 presidential election over the weekend accepted his party's nomination as a presidential candidate. Charles Bromsgain of the Liberty Party, who is running for the presidency for the third time, announced a laundry list of 15 commitments that he said he will fulfill if elected president. These include free public education and a reduction of the salaries of the president, vice president, and appointed officials. He challenged members of the legislature to do the same. Bromsgain criticized Vice President Joseph Boakai, who is also running on the ticket of the ruling United Party, for not condemning his supporters for promoting ethnicity. Bromsgain says if elected, he will work to unify Liberians.
Different this time is that we are engaging the Liberian electorate more than we've ever done, and they all seem to be receiving our vision for this country, for the renewal of Liberia, to reconcile our people, to end corruption, and to have the good of a middle class come about in our country.
Let me ask you on that reconciliation, because this is one of the pillars of your campaign now and your previous campaigns. I was speaking the other day to the chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, Councillor Verdier. He said that, James, whenever you talk to any of the presidential candidates, let them say what they will do if they are elected about implementing the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report. Would you implement that recommendation or would you not?
Well, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report provides a lot of things, some of which have not been implemented, some of which have been implemented, and we will take a look at this report, and those things that will help us move our country forward will certainly be implemented. We look forward to having these Palawan discussions, meeting Liberians, making sure that those who were affected by the war are made whole again, and those who were perpetrators of violence ashamed, and find a way to have the wealth of this country distributed in a way that people at the lower end of the echelon receive some of the benefits of our economy in order to reconcile with our people and move our country forward.
In your acceptance speech, you gave what you call your 15 commitments. One thing you said is that you want for your candidacy and then your presidency to unify the country. You said Liberia cannot afford to hand this country over to the agents of division. Somewhere in your speech, you mentioned also, which I thought maybe, is this a reference to anybody who is trying to divide Liberians along Congo and native Liberians' lines?
Yes, the vice president of Liberia, unfortunately, Joseph Boakai, and his supporters are basically staring out this old age divide in our country. Okay, something that we must arrest immediately. We are a post-conflict nation. We do not want that monster raising its head again, because there is no limit. Like I said in the speech, should you succeed in excluding those you refer to as Congo, what other ethnic group do you exclude later on? And where does this end?
Do you have any where the vice president or his people have said this about Congo Liberians?
It's the continuous play over the radio, to the media, all his supporters and strong men around him, and he has not come forward to say anything to the contrary. So the presumption, of course, is that he supports the campaign that is being conducted on his behalf.
One of the commitments you made, and that is if you are elected president, and you said, and that was number one on your list, that the government of Liberia, under your leadership, will underwrite all the Wired Minutes, the West African Examination Council fees, and make all government schools free of charge. Is this just for the exam fees, or you want to make free the cost of going to school in a government institution?
We want to make education free of charge in Liberia. Secondly, our emphasis is on the public schools, the government-owned schools.
Charles Bromsgain is the presidential candidate of Liberia's Liberty Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Dakar-based design firm recently took to the streets to take an in-depth look at street vendors. They wanted to know how the vendors pass their time, what they worry about, or how much money they make and more. Yan Lebo, co-founder of York's Digital User Experience Lab in Dakar, talks to Ricky Strike about some of the most surprising things his group learned and why they did the study.
You see, most of these people, I mean, some of these people now have smartphones, which means that they could be connected online, and so you can offer them a lot of things. So we just started like that, and we started interviewing some people, and after we made a formal qualitative study with these people.
What were you personally surprised about when you were doing this study?
Street vendors, this is the people you talk to every day, but you never really talk to them and understand them. And so this is why, you know, sometimes it's very surprising to see things, but different things could be very funny and interesting. Yeah, we were kind of surprised that to see that almost a third of the people we interviewed had smartphones. And most of them use an app that we didn't know a lot about. It's called Himo, which is kind of a WhatsApp, but more simple, I'd say. And they use Himo a lot to talk to their family. And they use it only as a vocal thing. Most of them are illiterate in French, but so they use the vocal message functionality of the app, so, which was interesting. Another aspect is that they get bored. It's surprising because when we see them, most of the time we are in a rush. But they have, you know, very intense period of rush. But then after, they spend hours under the sun without doing anything or without learning anything.
One of the things you said on your website that you found out was that some of these fruit sellers, for instance, can make up to 100,000 CIFA a day, which is a little under $200, maybe $180. Was that surprising?
First of all, we have to remind that it's a qualitative study, so it's not really a quantitative. So we only interview 25 people to really go deep into their emotion and frustration. So the numbers that we gave could be very not precise in a sense. But yes, we met some fruit vendors that were making some good days and this amount of money they could have these days. But it's not also the money that they have in their pocket because they have to pay the fruits and the...
It's revenue, not profit.
It's revenue, not profit, definitely. But yeah, definitely, this is a market that, even in terms of security, because at the end of the day, if you have this amount of money, this is a risk. So it could be interesting to find solution around mobile payments. And I think there is a lack of consideration about the entire ecosystem or companies in general towards those people. And most of the time, because it's hard to communicate with them. You need to speak Fula, and that's not easy for a lot of people.
That was Yann Lebeau, co-founder of York's Digital User Experience Lab. He was speaking to Ricky Strayak from Dakar, Senegal's capital. The Burundian government says poverty and political instability are some of the major causes of forced marriages in the country. As Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura, the government said he has launched a campaign to put a halt to the practice.
Buyenzi, one of the suburbs in Bujumbura, is where most of the young girls are married off or drop out from schools at a very young age. The suburb is considered as one of the neighborhoods that people living there face financial difficulties. Cases of forced marriages are common in this area. Nadia is a 27-year-old divorced woman who was married off when she was 16 years old.
I left home and went to live with a friend for almost 6 months. And after that, my parents came to look for me and told me to go back home. When they brought again the man to marry me, I had no another option but to accept.
In some local communities in Burundi, marrying off your daughter is seen as a privilege to the family. Age and education is rarely regarded, but the implication is felt, as most of these married couples' story have the same ending, which is breaking up. Burundi still faces a major challenge of high number of girls dropping out from schools at a very young age. Last year, more than 4,000 girls dropped out from school after being impregnated. Sada Abdul is a 45-year-old mother of 5 children.
You find most of families are poor, and because of poverty, they are forced to marry off their daughters to rich old men so they can get a hefty dowry.
According to the World Bank, 80% of the Burundian population will be living under poverty by 2018. Burundian law stipulates both girls and boys to get married at 18 years of age and above.
That was Moses Javier Rimana reporting from Bujumbura. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the results for matches played across 47 venues on the continent this past weekend in the group stage of the qualifying round for the 2019 African Cup of Nations in Cameroon. Do note that the first team named played at home. In Group A, Sudan 1, Madagascar 3, Senegal 3, Equatorial Guinea 0. Group B, Malawi 1, Comoros Island 0, Cameroon 1, Morocco 0. Group C, Burundi 3, South Sudan 0, Mali 2, Gabon 1. Group D, Algeria 1, Togo 0, Benin Republic 1, Gambia 0. Group E, Libya 5, Seychelles 1, Nigeria 0, South Africa 2. In Group F, Sierra Leone 2, Kenya 1, Ghana 5, Ethiopia 0. In Group G, DR Congo 3, Congo 1, Zimbabwe 3, Liberia 0. In Group H, Central African Republic 2, Rwanda 1, Ivory Coast 2, Guinea 3. In Group I, Burkina Faso 3, Angola 1, Botswana 0, Mauritania 1. In Group J, Niger and Swaziland settled for a 0-0 draw. Tunisia 1, Egypt 0. In Group K, Guinea-Bissau 1, Namibia 0, Zambia 0, Mozambique 1. In Group L, Cape Verde Island 0, Uganda 1, Tanzania 1, Lesotho 1. It might interest you to know that South Africa got their first ever win in a competitive match over Nigeria in Uyo. There have been 6 wins for the Super Eagles and 3 draws since 1992. Newly appointed Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Baxter described the win over Nigeria as special despite going into the game with little preparation.
I know where South African football stands at the moment, and I've worked with them for, as I said, when I came to the camp, lack of preparation time, no warm-up game before. When I came to the camp, I was worried. In a few sessions, they took away my worries. They told me, without actually saying it, that we have a chance, coach. So if we have the same attitude in every game, I'm happy, because we need to develop and we need to win games.
Super Eagles coach Gano Ross said his players played well but did not take advantage of their chances.
Nobody is happy about the result. These young players tried all their best. South Africa was more realistic than us. But when you only have young players, sometimes you must understand that you can lose and you cannot have always a positive result.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Somali and U.S. military forces say they have destroyed an Al-Shabaab training base in Somalia's middle Joba region. And that's it for this Monday, June 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton in Washington saying have a lovely day.
Music time in Africa. Me play dog big part to Villa Mibiwalu. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell. Who's got the best Pan-African music show? The one that's 60 minutes commercial free? You know it's me. This week on Music Time in Africa, I've got a magical mix of old classics, not so old classics, and fresh new bangers too. Les dogmatiques, les pragmatiques. You'll also meet Kenyan artist Tetushani, the Tuareg Desert rock band Terracot, and newcomer from Rwanda, Stanza Muvandimwe. The magic is in the mix, so don't miss it. Stay cool and stay current right here on Music Time in Africa. This Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep
you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.